Ah, the first Monday of March. There's absolutely nothing special about the day, so hi, I'm Joel Garcia. Welcome to the Pop Culture Shuffle. On today's show, I have a few things to talk about. First up, I talk about a certain type of fantasy story that I am not the biggest fan of. Let's just say it involves the open seas. Then, I talk about a Disney Channel original series that you probably never heard of. And if you don't, it might get canceled. And finally, I talk a bit NASCAR and some other sports I saw this weekend. But first, let's talk about some fantasy. Imagine yourself out on the ocean. Not on a tiny boat, but a majestic one. With you and its captain leading a group of your fellows, you explore the open seas, discover majestic locations, and seek out treasure. In the latter case, you may have to compete with others who may want the same stuff you're looking for, either through legitimate or illegitimate methods. If you haven't gotten the point, I'm pretty much summing up stories about pirates. We've all probably seen or heard at least one story featuring them, with the cliche "Argh!" Eye patches, peg legs, walking the plank, and lots of swordplay. Probably the most recognizable examples I could bring up are Peter Pan and Disney's Pirates of the Caribbean. In the former, you have Captain Hook as the classic antagonist to the titular flying boy. In the latter, you have an anti-hero in the form of Captain Jack Sparrow. In general, they show the opposite ends of pirates, either as dangerously menacing or lovable and charming. Productions featuring pirates continue to be popular to this very day. In addition to Pirates of the Caribbean, Disney has adapted Peter Pan multiple times in both animation and live action. Besides those two, the most successful example would be One Piece, a long-running manga about a group of pirates looking for the titular treasure. It has been adapted twice, first as a long-running anime, and more recently as a live-action Netflix series. With that said, I am not a huge fan of pirates. While I do like Disney's Peter Pan, more on that in a moment, I find swashbuckling adventures to be wearisome. If you've seen one pirate film, you've pretty much seen them all. I've watched Pirates of the Caribbean, and by that I mean two films. I went to see the third film at World's End in theaters with my family. I was frankly bored out of my mind from start to finish. Last week, I brought up what to do with bad or boring films in theaters. What I omitted from that segment was how At World's End was one of the films I wanted to walk out of. I had not seen the first two films, or if I did, barely recall what happened in them. I did say throughout the whole film, but like Hellboy 2019, I have never watched it again. I did try to get into this franchise again by watching the fourth film on Stranger Tides, but it was just as lackluster, especially the 3D gimmick. If I had to say why I don't find pirate stories that exciting, it might be how the 90s were a terrible time for pirate film and shows. Sure, there were things coming out with characters labeled as pirates, but none that screamed Captain Hook or the concept of a swashbuckling adventure. Literally, the only thing I've seen with pirates that I've liked has been Peter Pan. It's a bizarre paradox similar to how I don't care for giant robots, yet I'm a big fan of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Megazord. When it comes to Peter Pan, my experience has been limited solely to all four of Disney's adaptations. Oh yeah, there have been four adaptations by the House of Mouse. The original 1950s film is a classic, with some awkwardly outdated moments. The 2002 sequel, Return to Neverland, was surprisingly pretty good. And as for the live-action film, Peter Pan and Wendy, it was somewhat of a remake, but at the same time had a bit more drama and an even more intimidating Captain Hook played by Jude Law, of all people. As for the fourth one, well, I previously talked about it, but Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers, the movie. So if you want to check that episode out, it's from like last year, I think. But all I will say about it is that when it comes to its connection to Peter Pan, he's the main antagonist. Otherwise, I've avoided every other Peter Pan adaptation, including Hook. Yeah, despite that film's popularity, Robin Williams, and the Rufio chant, I've never seen it. I might someday, but then again, I have said the same thing about Star Trek Deep Space Nine several years ago, and so far, I've barely watched that show's first episode. The best way to explain why I don't find pirate productions exciting would be that I was never introduced to any other pirate-related show or film until I was a teenager. By then, the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise came around, but I was already into other things like NASCAR and Star Trek. When I saw Disney's Treasure Planet, a sci-fi adaptation of the book Treasure Island, I was nitpicking ridiculous details like how could they breed in space on a boat and barely notice the pirate elements? That and because Martin Short phoned it in. One of the few pirate-related productions I have tried to get into was the aforementioned One Piece through the anime's infamously edited dub that ran on Fox. When I later discovered the uncut dub, I chose to not even bother with the show, since it would take a lot of time to watch the whole thing. As of this recording, the anime consists of nearly 1,100 episodes over 21 seasons, as well as 15 films, 13 TV specials, and a handful of featurettes. All of which, I should note, are based on an ongoing manga with no end in sight, as far as I can tell. Oh, and the anime began airing the same year as Family Guy and SpongeBob, in 1999. By contrast, the Star Trek franchise has been going on since 1966 and only consists of around 900 episodes over 12 series as well as 13 films. The closest I have been to finding something with pirates that was exciting for me to watch was the anime Fena Pirate Princess. I have previously talked about that show as well, and honestly, to me, the first problem I had with the show was simply the word pirate in the title, since we're told Finn is a pirate princess, yet she barely does anything pirate-related. And the fact is, for the most part, we're following her with these characters who are samurai, and unless I'm wrong, that's not a pirate. Yeah, it had as much to do with pirates as Sailor Moon has to do with sailing. Which is absolutely nothing. Also, the ending sucked. I might someday rewatch Treasure Planet, considering the ever-increasing number of times I've brought it up on the podcast, but that's about it. At this point, it seems unlikely I'll ever enjoy anything else with pirates. Poetically, that ship has sailed. It has been a hard time to be an animation fan, especially for shows on cable. I briefly mentioned in my Wish review how one of the problems Disney endured during their centennial was the cancellation of popular shows. I was indirectly acknowledging The Owl House, a fantasy series that ran for 3 seasons before being cancelled. It's a long story, but one of the supposed reasons was Disney wanting to transition away from series with serialized narratives like Gravity Falls and focus more on standalone comedic shows like Big City Greens. This is despite the fact that Big City Greens is serialized, by not heavily. Even when I brought that up, Disney had also just canceled The Ghost and Molly McGee, a supernatural comedy about a ghost being cursed to hang out with a wacky girl. In that show's case, it was supposedly due to the episodes being dumped onto Disney Plus and not enough people streaming them. The lack of viewership sadly led to a potential third season being canceled and the show's ongoing mystery having to be abruptly resolved in a half-hour finale. It would be safe to say Disney Plus has pretty much made being a show on the Disney Channel an endangered species. From what I've noticed, Disney premieres a show on the channel in the usual weekly format, but at the same time, dumps multiple episodes in advance onto Disney Plus. As far as I can tell, Disney Channel does acknowledge Disney Plus on their active social media accounts, yet not on the linear cable channel. If you're someone who is not socially active online and only watches cable TV, you may incorrectly assume these shows are only on cable. This issue is solely limited to Disney, as their rivals tend to do things slightly differently. For starters, Cartoon Network and Nickelodeon acknowledge their streaming services. Now, in the case of when these shows come to their streaming services, that's a whole other story. I bring this all up not just to point out the difficulty of being a cable TV show in the streaming era, but to acknowledge one such show that has rapidly become one of my favorites, Marvel's Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Set in the Lower East Side of New York City, the show follows Lunella Lafayette, a 13-year-old science prodigy who winds up creating a portal that brings a red Tyrannosaurus Rex to the present day. She befriends Ed and names him Devil Dinosaur due to his pointy ears. Inspired by a photo of a scientist nicknamed Moon Girl, she takes up the name and the two team up to take on supervillains endangering their neighborhood. The show is based on an actual comic of the same name, which debuted back in 2015. From what I briefly looked up, the comic is technically a sequel to the late 70s comic book Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur, written by the legendary Jack Kirby. Said comic had the former Moon Heroes and Devil in New York City, where he then met Lunella. None of that backstory is in the series. Another difference was that Lunella was partially inhuman, basically the other type of mutant besides the X-Men. At the moment, that is nowhere to be seen on the show, yet. The show is explicitly set in the Marvel Universe, but makes itself clear that the setting is in a part of New York City oftentimes ignored by the major heroes. The first episode even cracks a joke about the unlikeliness of seeing Captain America around. In a way, it is reminiscent of how the former Netflix series, such as Daredevil or Iron Fist, focus on street-level antagonists who would likely never be on the same level as Loki or Thanos. Moon Girl is similar, although it does sprinkle in the occasional cosmic antagonist to shake things up a bit. The show is also vaguely connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, something which Disney recently pointed out in an Instagram post. The show does not play a major role in the universe's narrative, but characters such as Maria Hill from the Avengers films and Bill Foster from Ant-Man and the Wasp do make guest appearances. They're even voiced by their live-action counterparts, Kobe Smulders and Lawrence Fishburne. Fishburne plays a major role throughout the show. Not only does he reprise Foster, but he is also an executive producer on the series through his production company, Cinema Gypsy Productions. He also plays a certain Marvel comic character known as the Beyonder. In Star Trek terms, he acts as the Q to Lunella's Picard, basically being somewhat of a trickster. Without giving more away about the character, Fishburne is simply fantastic in the role and seems to really relish in it, in a good way. Now, it took me a while to start enjoying this show. At first, I assumed it would have been another preschool adaptation similar to Disney Junior's Spidey and His Amazing Friends. I have nothing against that show, but it was definitely made for a younger audience and not for longtime Spider-Man fans. I pretty much ignored it until one of the many influencers I follow shared a snippet from an episode that had Moon Girl fighting a bad guy while Childish Gambino's sweatpants played in the background. It was surprising to me since if you've never heard that song before, you would be shocked how such an explicit song was able to be cleaned up for a Disney Channel show. I eventually checked out the first episode. I wound up liking it so much, I proceeded to binge the rest of season 1. Concisely, it's a fun show. It's not as childish as Spidey or as gritty as Daredevil, but manages to fit right in the middle. There is a lot to like about this series. For starters, it's nice to have something different from Marvel after the countless animated series about the Avengers or Spider-Man. Obviously, there have been other Marvel animated series besides those heroes in the past few years, such as Guardians of the Galaxy, MODOK, and Hitmonkey. However, the former was more of an extension of its MCU counterpart, while the latter two were aimed at older audiences. Moon Girl also stands out because, well, unlike the other heroes I brought up, they've all at least appeared elsewhere in some other production, save for maybe Hitmonkey. She's basically a blank slate, because the only other thing most people might know her from being, well, the comic book. If you're someone who's only watched the films and TV shows, you probably have no idea who Moon Girl is. Another way Moon Girl stands out from other heroes? Family. Normally, heroes tend to be either without their parents, or have at the very least a single living relative, such as Spider-Man's Aunt May. Lunella, however, lives with both her parents and grandparents. It makes for an original dynamic, as Lunella has to deal with not only school and being a hero, but also making sure that her family never finds out her secret identity, which especially becomes an issue as time goes on. Also, without spoiling another twist, let's just say one of them plays a major part in her identity. This show reminded me slightly of the early 2000s Disney Channel series Kim Possible. Over on that show, Kim's family were well aware and supportive of her side hustle as a crime fighter as long as she stayed in school. I see Moon Girl as answering an unexplored possibility from that show. What if Kim kept her crime fighting career a secret from her family, and for how long? When it comes to the dynamic between Lunella and Double Dinosaur, they make for a hilariously fun team. Despite being on Disney Channel, the show thankfully avoided making Double the standard talking animal, and he only speaks in roars. Double mostly acts like a child, gleefully enjoying as much as he can of the city, especially hot dogs, but knows when to get serious. As for confidants, Lunella has her best friend, Casey Calderon, who also acts as her social media manager. She's a standard, hyperactive girl who mostly speaks in buzzwords, such as OMG, but is thankfully not annoying. Their dynamic is enjoyable, even when they argue, and it does give Lunella someone to talk to other than Devil roaring back. Like with most recent animated series, the show is serialized. It does a good job of catching viewers up with the narrative by characters quickly recapping the situation in a comedic manner. In addition, the show knows when to stop and introduce an antagonist, but in a manner that feels natural and not distracting at all. When it comes to animation, it is bright, lively, and colorful, similar to the MCU. It especially loves the pop-out colors, not just with Devil's bright red colors or Moon Girl's yellow-purple attire, but most especially during the fight scenes. Speaking of, The fight scenes are also slightly musical. Rather than just have Moon Girl and Double Dinosaur simply beat up the bad guys with some generic rock music in the background, each fight often begins with Lunella or another character pressing play on a device to start the music. It thankfully avoids becoming repetitive with the fight music, with no two fights sharing similar music. Sometimes it could be relatively slow and emotional, while in other cases fast-paced and intense. It helps to diversify the show's fight scenes, compared to other superhero productions which tend to limit themselves to either the aforementioned rock or something orchestral. If I had to recommend an episode that best sums up the show, other than the series premiere, it would be Skip This Ad, Dolescence, from Season 1. It best shows Lunella's tech expertise by her creating a app that can skip time, and her youthful inexperience by being horrified at what it does to her life. In a nutshell, it is a child-friendly take on the Adam Sandler film Click, only with an app instead of a remote and the equivalent of Siri rather than Christopher Walken. Also, the app is voiced by former astronaut Dr. Mae Jemison, who is just amazing in the role. Overall, this show is a fun and energetic addition to the Marvel Universe. It provides a breath of fresh air from the many Spider-Man and Avengers series. It features great animation, excellent music, and likable characters. Whether or not you enjoy the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or just want to see an animated series with some action, I recommend checking this show out. While the show continues to air weekly on Disney Channel, I highly implore to stream it on Disney Plus. As of this recording, you can check out Season 1 and most of Season 2 on the streamer. As for why, the more people who watch as much of the show as soon as possible on Disney Plus, the more likely it can continue to stay on the air over on Disney Channel. Otherwise, it might suffer the same fate as short-lived classics like The Ghost in Molly Magee and The Owl House. Marbles, Moon Girl, and Devil Dinosaur airs on Disney Channel and streams on Disney Plus. Finally, I wanted to talk about my Sunday. This past Sunday was a bit unusual for me as I basically watch sports from start to finish. And normally when I say that, it would just be, well, nothing but football. But this was a rare Sunday in which I was pretty much watching sports from like 9 in the morning all the way up until like around 5 o'clock. Or so, because I forgot about the last one. Oops. So first up at 9:30, it was the women's basketball game between Ohio State and Iowa. Now normally, I don't tend to watch women's basketball. Not because I don't like it, it's just because, well, it only comes on at the weirdest times, it's really hard to find on TV, but thankfully, this was a game that aired on the Fox Network and was the lead-in to the NASCAR race I was going to watch. I was glad I tuned in because I was just amazed seeing Caitlin Clark break that record. Now I know there's a lot of controversy between Caitlin Clark and, oh, she broke the all-time scoring record for the NCAA under different circumstances than, say, Pistol Pete did back in the 70s. But here's the thing to consider. She still broke the record. It counts. It doesn't matter if it's a different standard. She still broke the record. That's something to appreciate and acknowledge. Now, when it comes to NASCAR, this weekend they began their West Coast swing, which normally would consist of California, Las Vegas, and Arizona, but this time around it's only 2 weeks. So this week it was Las Vegas, and next week is Phoenix. California, if you're wondering, it's going in the midst of a reconstruction, so the racetrack is unavailable this season. Now when it comes to Las Vegas, the races were calm, which is a good thing. I know most people were probably expecting, if you tuned in, thinking, oh, it's going to be chaotic and crazy, and there were certainly moments of chaos, but it was thankfully calm, for the most part. I was just so happy that the truck and Xfinity series were not as chaotic as usual. And sometimes it's just nice to have a normal race with little to no chaos or anarchy. Save that for the Cup Series. Though there was history made during the Truck Series, in which Raja Karud did two things. He won his first pole for the truck race on Friday, and then went on to win the race. Now, if you don't know why it's such a miracle that Raja Karud won, he is actually the third African-American to ever win in NASCAR's major series, joining only Hall of Famer Wendell Scott and current Cup Series driver Bubba Wallace. And that is something to just be amazed by, because it's something that happens very rarely, and it's just amazing to see it happen. And that's not to say the other races weren't as exciting. The Xfinity Series race was just like, oh look, it happened. I like when that happens. It's just normal, calm, and well, not that interesting. Then again, there was something positive about the Xfinity Series. It broke the crazy streak that NASCAR has right now with Chevy. Seriously, if you look at who's won the last few races for the Cup, Xfinity, and Truck Series, it was pretty much Chevy. Like, every race was being won by Chevy until that Xfinity race in Las Vegas where a Toyota won. And that to me is a miracle. Now as for the Cup Series race, the Pennzoil 400, it was one that was, for the most part, trying to be calm, although there were some bizarre moments, such as say during the first stage that one of the cars hit the wall so hard they had to stop the race to fix a safer barrier. They had to bring somebody to weld the thing shut, but because there was a long extension cord, they had to stop the race for like a few minutes, which was just bizarre. Other than that, the race was pretty calm, save for all of the tires. There were several moments during this race in which tires were the name of the game. There was one situation in which someone's tire just straight up popped out of the car. There was another in which the pit crew was so incompetent, they accidentally forgot to get the tire out of the way. And so on and so forth. It was just a very bizarre day for tires. As for the eventual race winner, while I'm not a big fan of Kyle Larson, it's nice to see him win. And it was just pretty fun seeing his family celebrate with him in the car. Just because if you didn't see the broadcast, Kyle Larson's son was immediately running up to him to celebrate. And at the same time, his daughter was just like casually walking up to the celebration. Just really random. Still, it was a pretty decent finish. Though admittedly, I wanted to have another close Atlanta finish. But then again, we can't have that every week. Though I know that a lot of people might want that. That or more crashes. But this is Las Vegas. You're not going to get that. So it was a pretty good weekend for NASCAR. And I can't wait to see what happens next week in Phoenix. The only other sporting event I was checking out, and one that admittedly I really should have been paying more attention to, was the Women's Gold Cup. Yeah, believe it or not, this year marks the inaugural start of the Women's Gold Cup. Or, as is known in most promotional pieces I've seen, Gold Cup W. I admit that I haven't been paying that much attention to it, not because I don't want to see it, but mostly because, well, there have been like 100 other sports to watch at the time. I mean, it's not like the Gold Cup, which is normally held during the summertime, and during the summer, there's not that much to watch besides the Gold Cup, because during the summer, you have, oh, maybe baseball, a NASCAR race or two, but it's not like something that would impede me from watching something else. And right now, with the Women's Gold Cup, well, I've been more busy watching college basketball and, well, other things. Still, I have been paying attention to it because the semifinals and finals will be held here in San Diego at Snapdragon Stadium. And I now know who's going to compete in those semifinals. Now, the first semifinal will be between Canada and the United States. So that's going to be an interesting showdown. But for others, the one that might be much more fascinating would be the evening game between Brazil and Mexico. Okay, so a few hours after I did my recording for this podcast, apparently CONCACAF made a change to the scheduling. The Brazil-Mexico game will be up first, at like around 4 o'clock. And then the other game, Canada versus the United States, will take place at 7 o'clock. So that was something I didn't realize until much later, and I noticed, wait, they're flipping the games? Because technically, it should be Brazil-Mexico after Canada-United States. But I guess they wanted to put the interesting game on at night, and for once, it's not Brazil and Mexico, I guess. So, for now, I guess that's the way it'll go, and we'll see what happens next weekend at the Gold Cup here at Snapdragon Stadium. The Gold Cup streams on Paramount Plus and ESPN Plus. And on that note, that is all the time we have for today's show. If you would like to know when the next episode comes out, remember to follow or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite stream provider. You can also follow me on social media at Mr. Joel Garcia on Instagram, Threads, and Twitter/X, as well as at Mr. Joel Garcia 9 on TikTok. Until next time, thank you for listening.